This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to an especially late but especially great episode of Serious Issues.
That's what you know. You know that if it's 2 days late and Wayne drops something very loudly just as you start recording, that it's going to be the best episode ever.
And do you think there'll ever be a time in my life that I won't rhyme late with great and somehow think that will make up for being tardy?
No. No, I don't.
Also, not many things rhyme with tardy, so luckily I didn't
party.
Go that. Oh, actually, yeah.
It's touché.
Hey, party, my name's party. Levins. Anyway.
Hello, sorry, Siobhan.
That's my name. Sorry, Siobhan. It's been a hectic week. It's the busiest time of the year for me for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So it's just 3 months of pain.
Woo!
And of course, it's also the time of the year that comic book companies put out as many new series as possible.
Specifically to upset us, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I don't see any other reason why you would release a comic.
No.
This is Serious Issues. Every week we review all of last week's comics, and we happen to be recording this the day that the new comics for next week come out. So we're pretty much going to hit stop and then have to start reading again.
Ha 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 ha. I'm really happy about it.
Even with the extra days that you were given, still didn't. So the biggest...
Still didn't manage it.
The biggest problem that I face this week is that we have this dumb rule.
Yeah.
That maybe it's my dumb rule that I need to let go of.
I think it is.
Where I give every new series a shot in our opening segment, First Things First.
I have a couple of caveats. I will do all of them except for Cullen Bunn number ones and video game tie-in number ones and movie tie-in number ones or adaptations.
They're good caveats.
Yeah, they're pretty good rules.
I read 22 number ones this week.
I read... three less than that, I think. Because there were a couple that I was just like, nah.
Yeah, and Marvel in particular put out like 8 number ones this week.
Yeah.
So let's begin First Things First. The problem is I started these a week ago.
Yeah.
I picked up my comics on Wednesday. It's now Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So if I forget things or just start making up things, it definitely didn't happen in the books.
Who would know?
Just look, this is it's an entertainment podcast. It's not a factual or even particularly review-based podcast. Siobhan and I do this to entertain ourselves and hopefully you too.
Absolutely.
So let's kick this off. First things first this week. First thing comic. It couldn't be anything
obviously.
But this. Of course, Siobhan and the canonically lovely boyfriend Nate named their first child Shatterstar.
Yes. It's a beautiful name. It's a family name. Goes back generations.
And named after a particularly Liefeld-esque drawn character in the 90s.
Long ponytail, no feet, big sword.
And Shatterstar is his name, of course. And this week we've got a new Shatterstar miniseries. I mean, it's got to be a miniseries. I can't see this lasting very long. It's been written by Tim Seeley with pencils by Carlos Villa, inks by Juan Velasco, and flashback art by Gerardo Sandoval with colors by Carlos Lopez.
And I don't think this will be a mini because it's like exceptionally bad or anything. I just don't know how much interest there is in a character who was killed off 5 minutes into Deadpool 2.
Spoilers.
Sorry.
No one cares.
I can't believe I actually saw that.
So in this book, Shatterstar, of course, the mutant from a future timeline.
From the Mojo World.
The Mojo World.
Yeah. Gladiator from Mojo World.
Is living in the Marvel 616 universe as a landlord to other reality displaced people.
People. Yeah.
Yeah. Like some of them have superpowers, some of them are just people that are just in the wrong universe.
I thought that was a good setup. Funny.
Yeah, me too. And but we get the first few pages, we get like a lot of backstory for each of them, and I started kind of like just like going, "Why? I don't care about all this backstory." And then as I realized that, oh shit, he's a landlord, and these are all the tenants.
Yeah,
that is actually a really cool concept. But unfortunately, because it's a superhero comic, this isn't just a comic about him being a landlord, which I would love.
How good would that be? Genuinely, that would be so fun. Good fun.
A rift opens up, and a bunch of demons and evil people that Shadowstar has fought at some point in his long battle-drenched history, they show up and kill / kidnap all of his tenants. And now he's going to go back to Mojo World to fight for them to come back. And Grandmaster is involved somehow.
Grandmaster now is Mojo, I guess.
Okay.
I suppose. I thought that was like such a promising setup. And then they just took it all away from me. And I don't have that much interest in just like a regular Shatterstar comic, if there can be such a thing. But like Shatterstar going back to Mojo World and being a gladiator is just about the most typical Shatterstar comic you could get.
Yeah. So what are you and Nate drawn to in about Shatterstar? Is it just because he looks ridiculous, or is
genuinely, when I got pregnant, it was a game in the back room of Kings for pretty much my entire pregnancy to come up with the like most ridiculous superhero inspired name that we could possibly give my child.
Okay, great.
And that just stuck for some reason.
Great.
And then a Shatterstar action figure came out the week that he was due, and then he was born, and it was crazy. So I think it's meant to be.
So Shatterstar number one, are you going to continue with this?
Look, I'm going to give it another issue. I like Tim Seeley. I liked the art. I thought it was like a good sort of fun superhero thing. I liked that there was a talking pug dog. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in the same
boat. Check out another issue.
We also got another number one series for another obscure character that from the 90s-ish, I guess. Sleepwalker.
I know. Hey, Scott Sheen's from King's Comics.
Yeah, Scott Sheen's from King's Comics. You have 30 seconds to tell us about Sleepwalker.
Who's Sleepwalker?
Come, have a microphone.
Hey, Scott. Come here for 1 second. Do you mind? Can you tell us who Sleepwalker is quickly?
You have 30 seconds.
Okay, yeah. Sleepwalker is... he's from the dream world. He's kind of like a police officer from the dream world. So he's from a race of aliens that kind of like police dreamscape and stop nightmares, like the embodiment of nightmares coming through and stuff like that.
But he's tethered to like a regular guy.
Yeah, so the guy's got to be asleep. So he's either got to like knock himself out, like meditate, like go to sleep somehow in order for Sleepwalker to manifest in the real world.
Can you recommend like a Sleepwalker series from the past that you like?
He had his own series. It was I had a lot of them. He was in the New Warriors, I think. He would always cameo in the New Warriors. He was in Infinity Crusade. I think it was like the third one that the guys did after Infinity Gauntlet. He appeared in that a lot.
Just sleeping in the background.
But he's kind of like Man Thing and some other characters where you don't see much of him these days. So yeah, the issue was pretty fun. But
can just review
I'll
this.
Review it.
No,
hang
no.
on a second.
No, he can review it. Give us less work. It's written by Chad Bowers and Chris Sims.
And you having a
did you
recording
like it?
On a Wednesday? Yeah, did you like it?
Actually, I did like it. Yeah.
Me too. Me too. I was really surprised.
It was really fun. So yeah, this ties into the Infinity Wars event. Thanks, Scott.
Got such an encyclopedia. Yeah. I was like, yes, I know exactly who knows who Sleepwalker is.
he's the most beloved member of the King's Comics team, like bar none. No one would dispute that.
Scott has like fans. Although one time someone came in and like from Japan and took a bunch of pictures with Wayne and was like, "You're famous. You're famous. Your comic book store is famous." So, also, Wayne has fans. Anyway.
This is written by Chad Bowers and Chris Sims. Art by Todd Newark. Nork. Todd Nork?
Nork?
Sure. Nork's great. Colors by Rochelle Rosenberg. Yeah, this ties into Infinity War. So, I thought this was... I'm not familiar with the character of Sleepwalker, but having just been re-jogged my memory by Scott, I have read Infinity Crusade. So, I do remember being like, who's the asleep guy? I was like, who is this
asleep guy?
And I was like, when this came out, I was like, who is this a combination of? Like, I thought it was like one of the Infinity War books. But no, yeah, it is just like, this character has apparently existed even during all this time that he wasn't featured in comic books. And so, this is him trying...
Having a nap. Yeah, trying to fix stuff.
He basically, awakens the Sleepwalker character, and the Sleepwalker character is going to, stop what Gamora has done by combining, by folding the universe on each other. It means she's made all the nightmares even worse.
Yeah, bad news.
And it's really silly, but it's excellently drawn.
And who's Man-Thing combined with?
Man-Thing's in there?
Wasn't that just Man-Thing?
No, that's Dark Hawk.
Sorry.
Starhawk. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Man-Thing, Thang, Thoom shows up,
good.
The combo of them. And then there's a combination of Ant-Man and Hulk at the end, too.
That's a bad combo.
Scott Banner.
You wouldn't like him when he's angry because he'll beat up his wife.
Oh, Jesus. But it's Scott.
It's really sad.
Scott Lang.
Oh, I thought it was... No, it's Pym.
No, it isn't. It's Scott.
It's fucking Pym.
His name's Scott Banner.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyway, it's cool.
I like it. Good joke, though. Yeah, always
thanks.
Funny.
Thanks, bro.
So I definitely will be continuing with that. Absolutely. That was pretty fun.
More fun than expected.
X-Men Black is a new series of one-shots that Marvel are putting out. And each of them features an X-Men villain. And they're all by different teams. I'm really looking forward to the Mojo one, which I think is coming out this week. Not because
really?
I care about the character that much, but it's written by Scott Aukerman,
who is
behind Comedy Bang Bang.
Yep.
Has done a few little issues here and there of Marvel stuff. A preview for it came out, and Mojo is a comics gator.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! That's really good.
Yeah, it's really, really clever. The preview I read for it, so looking forward to that. Cool. But before we got that, we got this. The first one is Magneto, written by Chris Claremont, of course, the legendary X-Men writer, with pencils by Dalibor Telagic, inks by Roberto Poggi and Belladino Bravo, and colors by Dono Sanchez Almara. This is X-Men Black Magneto, and. It is just, I feel like I've read this Magneto story 100 times.
Oh, 100%. Old man Magneto makes friends with a small girl, because that's not weird at all, and then is like, I have to kill a bunch of people because I'm Magneto.
And they're going to hurt the mutants.
Yeah,
so quick.
And it all takes place in a small town diner.
Yep.
Small town values. Magneto.
So it wasn't bad, I just felt like I've read this so many times. I probably read it written by Chris
Claremont
100 times.
Chris Claremont has probably written it 3-4 times. I like the sort of bringing Magneto back to his good guy, bad guy roots.
Yeah.
That was quite fun. Art was fine.
And then there's a strange Apocalypse backup, which I guess is going to be like a thing that's going to be in the back of all these X-Men Blacks.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever. Give me the Mojo one. I'm excited for it.
All right.
I hope it's as good as the preview was.
That sounds funny.
That's out today.
Go to your local comic book store.
We got a new series starting called Typhoid Fever Spider-Man.
It's everyone's favorite kind of event where it just takes place across a bunch of different comics, or each comic is like a number one and that involves different characters.
So this is Typhoid Mary escaping her mental asylum, and the first superhero she comes across is Spider-Man. And so a lot of this is a lot of hallucinating. It's been written by Clay McLeod Chapman, who's writing all of the issues that this semi-event crosses.
Mm-hmm.
and arts by Stefano Landini, Rochelle Rosenberg on colors. She's busy this week.
She's a busy lady.
Good
colors.
I don't care about the character of Typhoid Mary.
I don't think I've ever heard of her.
Really? She's a Daredevil character.
Okay. And she is also... So she has many, many personalities. She's like an evil Crazy Jane. Is that kind of her vibe?
It's like, yeah, but she can also like make people catch on fire, like spontaneously combust. With her crazy powers.
Whoa.
You know when people, like, it was like a thing.
It's
I'm like,
so
it's
crazy.
It's like, yeah, it's like, oh, we can't give her powers of flight. Let's just make her crazy.
Yeah. That's a good power. Women, they're fucking nuts. Sorry. There's children in the store.
Oops. Are they? Oh, yep. That's fine.
Anyway, but so she also has like multiple personalities and one of them's called Bloody Mary. Is that correct?
I guess so.
I sort of found this like, I guess because I was unfamiliar with the basic concept of the character, I was like, none of this makes any sense. It's jumping all over the place. And then I figured out what was going on.
Yeah, there are some clever moments in this issue. I don't think I'd...
Yeah, you know. I liked the art, and I'm almost interested in seeing her fight the X-Men.
Yeah,
that's
which interesting. That's what's going to happen next issue, and then she's going to fight Iron Fist in the final issue.
That seems like a...
It's strange that Daredevil isn't going to show up, but I assume maybe he will in the Iron Fist one.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm interested enough. I think the writing is pretty different to what I was expecting on this event.
I wonder why they've chosen to do her. I wonder if she's going to be in like a Netflix series or something. I'm so suspicious of Marvel
definitely
now.
Because of that. I think if you loved Lemire's Moon Knight run, this is like pales in comparison to it. But
yeah.
Thematically, I think it is pretty similar. So
yeah.
Give it a shot.
I didn't hate it.
Spider-Man continued his onslaught of number ones this week with the Superior Octopus number one, which is the finale for Edge of Spider-Geddon, and Spider-Geddon, the main event, starts this week. The
Woo!
Big Spidey multiverse event.
Yes, please.
Did you see Venom last week?
No, I really want to. Everyone
it's
says
so
it's like
friggin' stupid. It's great.
All the girls at Queens of Kings were like, it's basically a rom-com between Tom Hardy and the symbiote.
Yeah.
Symbiote, whatever. Anyway, I very, very much want to see that.
I loved it. It's terrible, but I loved it.
Yeah, great.
And Tom Hardy is just...
I love him.
Like, Tom... I've described it as, like, no one wants to be in the movie except Tom Hardy, who really wants to be in the movie.
Yes, please. That's the best kind of movie. I feel like that's also the only kind of movie that Tom Hardy does. He's like, I like this thing. I really like this thing.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
one else cares. I'm still going to do it.
Like, his take on Bane is still so legendary.
I love it.
That, like, he, I don't know. Like, it's not what anyone expected, but it's
Or
like,
anyone wanted.
But I love it.
It's the worst, best.
Yeah. The finale of it, like the final post credit scene, is a 5-minute extended kind of look at Edge of Spider-Verse.
Oh.
Not Edge of Spider-Verse. What's it called? Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
The animated Spider-Man movie. And fuck, it looks so
really good.
I reckon that could be my favorite movie of the year. And it's coming out in December.
I'm very excited. Is it getting like a wide release, I assume?
Yes, yeah, of course
really?
It is. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're like, of course it is. As if animated
Dude,
movies always get a wide release.
The voice cast is incredible. Do you watch Atlanta?
Nope.
One of the main characters, Paperboy, is the voice of Miles Morales' father.
Great.
Which is great. And John Mulaney, the comedian.
He's Spider-Ham.
Spider-Ham.
Yep, I knew that.
Of Nick Cage's Spider-Man Noir.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
I'm so excited. Okay.
I need to stop hyping it up in my head. But yep. So Spider-Geddon is going to be like a great little introduction to anyone that's keen to kind of learn about the Spider-Verse before that movie comes out. The Superior Octopus number one, written by Christos Gage, who was writing the Spider-Geddon event, with art by Mike Hawthorne, who was one of my favorite, like, just always just kind of in the background doing good work at Marvel. House artist, yeah.
Yeah, 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 absolutely.
Wade Von Graubadger, great name to say. Great
always
inks
fun.
Too. And colors by Jordi Belair. So a really great team on this book. This basically catches us up with Dr. Octopus, who is now...
He's like a Silicon Valley tech bro.
Yeah, he's like he's in a cloned body of Peter Parker,
but with a fascist haircut.
Yeah, and like trying to hide his feelings and his identity from that the short girlfriend that he used to have. Oh no.
What's her name? Marconi, isn't that her last name?
Yeah, yeah. She's a good character.
Can't
I like her a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But Hydra show up and demand that because he was on Hydra's side during Secret Empire,
and he is still wearing his Hydra like costume. So really, you should change it up.
They show up and demand their tech back, and just as that happens, he fights Gorgon
and Arnim Zola.
It's like fun, and then I don't know what the Spider-Geddon part is, but it's kind of like basically
just a little backup.
Sets him up as Superior Octopus.
Hmm.
It's fun.
Yeah, it was great. It was good fun.
So if he's going to be like one of the main characters in Spider-Geddon, I think that's going to make it a fun event.
I'm into it.
Because he is still, like, even though he's trying to be good, he's still just like this, you know, curmudgeon grump.
Yeah, he's just still an old octopus in a young spider's body.
That is what the episode is called. So now we've got two What If issues from Marvel. What If is I guess it started as Marvel's Elseworlds.
Yeah.
Where they would do kind of like, you know, what if...
Peter Parker had six toes.
Perfect. But it'd be like, yeah, like they would pick like a classic event. Like, you know, what if Thanos clapped his hands instead of snapping his fingers? And then it would be like, you know...
It's a much sassier Marvel U.
But...
Generally single issues.
Yeah, so this week we got What If Flash Thompson Became Spider-Man and What If the X-Men.
Yeah, What If X-Men.
But the first one is just a classic kind of story written by Jerry Conway, in which Flash Thompson is the one who gets bitten by the spider, and he's obviously a much more headstrong,
jerky
Spidey.
Who's supported by Jonah Jameson. I thought that was a fun twist. That was good.
And then Peter Parker... still has Uncle Ben, but then because he wasn't able to give a blood transfusion to Aunt May, Aunt May is the one dying.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I mean, it gets a bit hilariously heavy-handed towards the end when Flash Thompson
punches Peter through
through his caravan.
Yeah, because he still lives in a trailer because being Spider-Man doesn't pay the bills for old Flash.
But it is kind of fun, that kind of like butterfly effect of if one person isn't who they were destined to be, what else changes in the world?
Absolutely. And it, you know, it references a bunch of classic Spider-Man moments that are, it's sort of good fun. It wasn't like, it didn't change my life in any way, but I thought it was a good answer to what if Flash Thompson became Spider-Man.
And it actually weirdly quite well used the Unseen, which is, yes, who Nick Fury Sr. is now, the, yes, Watcher-esque kind of character.
I love that.
And I've not seen him used well ever.
I've not seen him used.
The other what if was written by Brian Edward Hill.
Okay, I didn't read this, which is like dumb because I like Brian Hill, but I was like, nah, this is so, it's too much. I can't be bothered. But then I looked, like, the end looks cool. Anyway,
okay, so do you like the movie Ghost in the Shell?
The movie?
Or the comic, the manga.
Yeah.
So imagine if, like, it was just the Cable and Professor X as the old man in that, and then, well, actually, no, Cable is kind of, like, the main character. I don't know, whatever. But it's basically, like...
Who's Scarlett Johansson?
Well, that's Cable. Domino.
Oh, okay.
Domino becomes that character.
Okay.
It's pretty much Ghost in the Shell, but as the X-Men, but it's the EXE men.
Okay.
It's computers.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Is
that good?
Whatever. I'm not wild about Ghost in the Shell to begin with. Like, I just, it's not one of my things.
Yeah.
I think if it was, I would have appreciated this a lot more.
Okay.
But it's fun. The art was, oh, it was cool. I can't find the credits for this book. I can't tell you who did the artwork, but it was good.
Yeah, because the those little scenes where it's sort of, I guess they are in the computer or whatever. It's really cool.
Giannis, Milan Giannis. Wow, he has Giannis in his name twice.
That's
and
cool.
Rochelle Rosenberg on colors. It was interesting, which is what these books should be.
Yeah.
And they just kind of set up a weird world that we'll never visit again. Let's move over to DC now. We've got two books from DC, two number ones, that is. The first of which is The Batman Meeting the Max. So it's Batman and the Max, Arkham Dreams, written and drawn by the Max's creator, Sam Keith. The Max, of course, being...
What? I don't know what the Max is. Who is the Max?
What's so you've never watched the Max?
No.
So you don't know who... Like, so no. You're just aware of Sam Keith through what?
Through Batman.
Right.
And through pointy ears. And through comic books. I'm aware of the Max.
Yeah, right.
So, but I'm not aware of... Like, I haven't read it. I know it because of covers.
I know it because they made a cartoon series in the 90s based off of Sam Keith's comics. And I have a distinct memory of watching it one Saturday night on SBS. And the Max, who is like this big purple alien...
with big teeth.
Talking about how he needs to get back to the dreaming... So not the dreaming, so the outback, so he can save the Jungle Queen. And my dad looking over to me and going, what are you watching?
sounds racist.
So, this is like a book in which the Max is this big purple alien with big yellow claws in Gotham. And Batman takes him to Arkham Asylum in order to try and work out what his deal is. And then ends up traveling via the Max's brain into the outback, which is where the Max is from. And they track down... Did you read this?
Yeah, I did.
They track down like a... It's not important. It's an absolutely bonkers story. I love Sam Keith's artwork.
So good.
So it doesn't really matter what happens in the book.
I just want to look at the pictures. I think the thing that I was not anticipating, because my view of the Max, only knowing it through working in a comic book store and seeing the covers and seeing the people who bought it, was that it would be like a kind of ultra-violent 90s-style thing. I was not prepared for how goofy this was.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
It's really, really goofy and like philosophical.
Yeah. It's real weird. It kind of... it's like, what if Concrete had way more jokes? But man, he just draws the best.
Concrete's
like,
a comic, by the way.
Yeah, sorry.
The weirdest aside you've ever done.
You know, Concrete by Paul Chadwick. That's a gorgeous Batman.
Like, I know, and wow, I love
wow.
The bat symbol on his chest is this really like skinny bat. Yeah, it's great.
And it's the longest, pointiest ears and the best like rugged chin. Sam Keith's art is so weird and great.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's almost like Uncanny Valley-ish in that it's like so realistic and then so warped.
And because this is a co-published between DC and IDW, which I think IDW is funding, there's just like a billion variants for them to make as much money off this
probably
as possible.
Sure.
And the variants, some of them are incredible. Like that's brilliant.
That's gorgeous.
Yeah. So definitely check this out. Give it a little flick through.
Yeah, worth it.
Don't get the Jim Lee cover. Get the Sam Keith cover.
What are you doing?
Actually, that is a pretty good Jim Lee cover.
It's a pretty solid Jim Lee.
Yeah.
if you like that.
So yeah, I'm definitely going to continue reading this just for the artwork alone, even though like the story makes no sense to me whatsoever. But
that's
kind of what I like about Sam Keith. He's real crazy. The Witching Hour is a new event that brings together the Wonder Woman series and Justice League Dark. I know what you're thinking. Justice League Dark launched 3 issues ago. Why didn't they just make this the Justice League Dark series? I don't know
that
either.
The answer is shut up.
Yeah,
shut
exactly.
up, Levins.
So The Witching Hour, yeah, it's a kind of like, you know, mini event through DC. It's been written by James Tynion IV, who was the writer on Justice League Dark. Art by Jesus Marino, and that was my favorite thing about the book.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Romulo Fiato Jr. on colors. So basically, I don't know, at some point in Wonder Woman's history, when she was a girl, she was marked by a witch.
Yep.
And various other magic-aligned characters in the DC Universe were also marked by these witches. And now the witches are showing up, or this main witch is showing up to reclaim her powers that have been bestowed on those who were marked by her.
Yes.
And that means the destruction of everything.
Oh, no.
Because that's the only kind of book that DC writers know how to write right now.
Yes, this will be the death of magic in this world or something.
But I
liked this a little bit.
I didn't at first. I was like, God, more of this insane like amount of like, you know, just info dump lore of all these characters that I thought I knew more than enough about.
Yeah.
But then suddenly it becomes this like quite fun adventure where Swamp Thing and Detective Chimp and
Man-Bat
and Zatanna are kind of like the main catalyst in trying to get this world good again. Because
and it's like this feels very like early 2000s DCU, like the teams and stuff, the version of the Justice League that we have that's Martian Manhunter and John Stewart and all those characters.
Definitely.
That was cool. I liked this.
But that's what the Justice League book is now, but it's just, because it's written
it's
by Scott Snyder, it
so
doesn't feel
it.
Like a throwback. It feels like whatever he's trying to do. Not our thing. I loved John Constantine in this issue.
Yes, I loved all of the teen witches.
Yep.
Like we got to see, is it Alice 13? No.
Yeah.
Tracy 13.
That's right.
Black Alice was in the background there and a bunch of those cool characters. So I loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was fun. And I think this should have been the number one issue of Justice League Dark, not
totally.
Whatever we got that,
you didn't
that
need
I stopped
to,
reading.
Yeah, you didn't need to like build up to this with the Justice League Dark.
But, you know, it worked. We stopped reading after issue one and now we're back,
now
for,
I'm back.
For issue four. So whatever.
God damn it, you got me.
So well done, Witching Hour. Pretty good stuff. Image put out like a lot of number ones this week.
Yeah.
This first one I'm talking about is my favorite one that they put out.
It's called
Dead Rabbit, and it's the new book by Jerry Duggan with art by John McCrae and Mike Spicer on colors. John McCrae, best known as being a 90s and early 2000s collaborator with Garth Ennis on some of his better books during that era. Hitman being one of them.
Great.
So you kind of already know what kind of book you're getting into. This is a retired vigilante who was almost like a Robin Hood figure who robbed as much as he did stop criminals. And now that he's retired, he lives with his wife who is bound to a wheelchair and frequently has seizures and is hiding that he's gone back to vigilantism in order to basically, you know, support them because he spent
all the
money that he stole many years ago. And so some of this book is told from the point of view of the criminals he robbed from. Also, like, there's a great news report. They do so much really effortless world building just in the first three pages of this book.
Absolutely.
That you just know everything about this character. And then you just get a great story featuring him, you know, 15 years or whatever, 20-something years after he quit vigilante business. It gets a little bit grim. I'd say there's an element of like Breaking Bad to this comic book.
Oh yeah, it's got that kind of gritty realism dealing with a fairly like fruity subject.
And like you know, the main character, the protagonist. You know, you don't know if what he's doing is right or wrong. I fucking love this.
I love this. This like all those sort of action movie. Like, this feels like a Bruce Willis action movie, and I love it.
Yes, definitely.
You've got an older guy coming out of retirement to just punish some bad guys and support his crippled wife.
Yeah, totally.
While he also works at a hardware store. Great.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we had a not so much a complaint, but, like, yeah, I mean, like I said, there's, like, Analog, which is the first image book put out this year by Jerry Duggan that he wrote, was, like, pretty hard to follow issue to issue. There was so much to remember, whereas I feel like this is a very, very focused and much more kind of simpler concept that'll be a fun one to follow month to month.
I mean, this is much less like sci-fi than analog, so there's a lot less complicated world building to do, and we can just jump straight into the story of this one guy.
Yep.
And it's great, and the art's so perfect and looks awesome, and the colours are really perfect. I loved this. I thought this was so good.
Excellent number one. So pick up Dead Rabbit. That's my hot pick of these 22 number ones I read this week.
Yeah, gee whiz.
Blackbird issue number one came out this week, written by Sam Humphries and Jen Bartel on art. Get this for the Jen Bartel art.
This is Sam Humphries. Why did I think this was someone else?
It's definitely Sam Humphries because the character, like, you know, narrates every single thing that she does.
Who's writing Isola? Not Sam Humphries.
No, so that's the old Batgirl team.
Brendan Fletcher. Why? Yeah. I thought this was Carl Brendan Kershaw. Fletcher for some reason in my brain.
So Blackbird tells the story of a girl who, when she was young, was visited by a like a magical being, and then there's an earthquake, and no one believes her that she was visited by a magic, and now she's like a burnout. Is she a teenager still or early 20s? But basically, like, yeah.
She's a really hot burnout, though.
She's way too hot. To be working at a bar where she's being forced to take out the
rubbish. How'd you get
the
money to get your nails done, girl?
So no one believes that she had this magical experience when she was a kid, and then she's living on her sister's couch. Her sister hates her, but she blames everything on her kind of like depression and which is possibly linked to this magical stuff.
And she's taken too many prescription drugs.
I just feel like. Like, we read that Green Lanterns book that Sam Humphries wrote, in which Jessica Cruz was this woman crippled by her depression. I feel like I don't have depression. I know others that do, but I don't know if his depiction of it is a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I might be very wrong. I'm willing to be wrong. I never find his use of it particularly.
It's a bit shallow or a bit surface.
Yeah, yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, like, I mean. And maybe, like, Jen Bartel draws things that are gorgeous. But maybe something that's gorgeous isn't necessarily what this book needed. If we're supposed to have this character who is really going through a tough time in her life, she's addicted to prescription painkillers, she is working late nights at a bar, drinking too much, blah, 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 she shouldn't look this polished. I know that sounds, like, dumb, but, like,
I agree with you that, for sure.
I wanted to like this so badly. I've had posters in the store about it. I thought this looked amazing. I was so excited. I love Jen Bartel. I think this is the first comic that she's done interiors on. And I feel really like let down by the slightly immature, shallow, fanficky vibe of this.
Yeah, totally agree with you. Yeah. I feel like almost every one of her dialogue balloons could be, but my depression...
Yeah. But I thought magic was real. And she's quite, like, I mean, maybe this is the point. Maybe this is part of her character arc. But she's a very unappealing character. Like, she just takes advantage of her sister and is horrible to her and is insistent that this magic is real and she wants to be part of this elite, glamorous society of magic people. And I don't find that appealing. Like, the fact that she's just like, I want to be a hot magic person.
Maybe
I don't
I was
find
14,
that, like, a cool thing.
Yeah, maybe if I was 14.
Even if I was 14.
Okay. 13?
I don't know. Yeah. You know what? I'm sure this would appeal to a certain... I don't know what I was going to say. But, like, I'm sure this would appeal to some teenagers.
Yeah.
It's just not necessarily for me.
Yeah. Errand Boys is another number one that came out this week through Image, written by DJ Kirkbride and drawn and colored by Nikos Koutsis. And this was a pretty funny
I didn't get
sci-fi
this.
Book in which a space delivery man... learns that his father and his mother-in-law have died in a car crash, and he is now the next in line to basically be the sole carer for his brother-in-law.
Okay.
Who is much younger and not this kind of Han Solo-esque, roguish kind of would-be hero / villain that kind of, you know, fucks his way through the space. And so he's now like, yeah, basically he's forced to become father to a brother, like an alien brother-in-law that he's never really had a connection to. And it got some good jokes out of it. I quite like the character of the younger brother who's, you know, his parents just died and is now in the care of this fuckhead.
rough.
But yeah, I think we'll give this another shot actually. I thought it was pretty entertaining. And I read it just after... another sci-fi book through that Dark Horse put out that we'll put out, we'll talk about later, and this was way more appealing than that. Okay. I think because of the jokes. It was a genuinely funny. I didn't love some of the designs and some of the world building within this, but the jokes got me through the issue and maybe enough for me to read another one. But
cool.
We'll see. That's called Errand Boys. And final image number one this week is Juke Joint, written by T. Franklin.
This is the first comic book I've ever read that has a trigger warning.
Yeah. Art by Aletha E. Martinez, a color by Shari Chankama. Juke Joint, yeah, it comes with a trigger warning for domestic violence and sexual harassment and sexual assault, because this is a book set in a brothel.
Yep.
Or a juke joint.
Mm-hmm. But it's a very open-minded brothel where you can be your true self as long as that true self isn't someone who likes raping.
Yeah, because the people who own and staff the Juke Joint happen to be vicious monsters.
Cool.
We see a would-be rapist's jaw ripped off in the early mm-hmm. panels, and then his head snapped. There's a lot of kind of like black magic at play in this book. Have you got more to say to it than I do? Because I've read...
No, I only read halfway.
Yeah, I don't know if this really appeals to me that much.
Yeah, you know, like, it has certain elements of, like, kind of grindhousey, witchy sisterhood, but I think there's a better version of that being done in Jordi Belair's Redlands.
Which came back this week, and we're going to be talking about that later on. But I think Juke Joint, it's a very different book to what everything else I read this week. I think, it reminded me a lot of early 90s Vertigo.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, just because they've written so many books with those same themes in this similar kind of setting.
But also, this is a difference because this is written by, like, women.
Yeah, totally.
Written
yeah.
and illustrated by women. So that's definitely going to give it a different slant at the very least.
Yeah, so that's Juke Joint number one, the last of our image books that we're going to talk about. We've still got like 10 more number ones. Yeah, let's try and burn through
I didn't
these.
Get to this one.
Oh, that's such a shame.
Yeah. Okay.
So Vault Comics, who are putting out... Vault are putting out so many good books at the moment. Mm. Like, honestly, in like the last like 3 months, I feel like they've started. Like, I felt we've gotten like so many of my favorite number ones from Vault. And this was no.
Guys, make sure you add any Vault comics that you want to your standing order.
Because they go really quickly, do they?
Just it's a smaller publisher, and so if we don't know that you want it, we won't order it.
Yep. So this is called These Savage Shores. It's written by someone called Ram V or Ram 5.
Great.
And illustrations by Sumit Kumar, colors by Vittorio Astone. And this is a story set during, I bet you if I just guessed like this time period, I'd get it wrong. I'm going to say 1600s or potentially 1800s, but like it's set in the days of yore. a man of quite high profile reveals himself as a vampire by feasting on the neck of a young woman.
Uh-huh.
And is discovered. And instead of being he's hunted by a vampire hunter and rescued at the last minute, and he is sent to God, where is he sent to? I wish I could tell you. It's a really, really great book, but I wish it had like, here we go. Sent to Calicut on the Malabar coast. It's in 1766.
Great.
So in between the 1600s and 1800s. So it was close. He's sent to somewhere where there is constant sunlight, which is no good for a vampire.
No good at all.
And what's great about this, and I will do a slight spoiler just for the end of this first issue of this, what I hope will be a long-running series, is that we learn so much about this this vampire. He's the kind of like, we're led to believe he's the protagonist of this series.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this is going to be a book about... like him trying to live in this new exotic locale as a vampire, mm-hmm. trying to avoid the sun and also just trying to adjust to this new way of life.
Because,
you know, he's originally
not
in,
a vampire.
Yeah, because he's in London, I guess, at the start of this. As he kind of like, on his first night in Calicut, he asks if he can, he's warned not to patrol the grounds at nighttime. But of course, that's what he wants to do because he wants to find someone to eat as a vampire. And so when he does go out on his hunt, he tracks down another woman who we see dancing before he tracks her down. As he's about to prey on her while she swims, he is attacked by a weird monster that is either friends with the woman or controlled by the woman. And
cool.
The end of the book is his severed head being delivered to those who are meant to be minding him.
Great.
So this, I think, is going to be more about the Savage Shores that he visited as opposed to this man's journey.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a really great monster book.
And it looks gorgeous.
Unbelievable art. Really so beautiful. Great. I hope a lot of people check this one out. This and Dead Rabbit were my two favorite number ones this week.
Man, just vault.
These Savage Shores. Check it out. Great creative team that I've never read or anything by before. And a really solid first issue.
Cool.
The Umbrella Academy. It is a beloved, apparently, series written by Gerard Way with art by Gabrielle Barr of the wonderful brother team, Gabrielle Barr and Fabio Moon. I've read it. The first series. They put out like 10 issues through Dark Horse, like almost like 10 years ago now.
Yeah. I have not. I have never read it because people, when I first started at King's, it was sold to me as like a poor man's Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol.
Right.
So I was like, well, I'm just going to read Doom Patrol. But I know lots of people who like really, really love this book. So I feel like I wanted to give it a chance.
I read it as soon as digital comics were a thing. It was one of the first digital comics I bought on my iPad.
Okay.
And I picked it up because I heard people compare it to Wes Anderson movies as opposed to Grant Morrison stuff.
Okay.
And so there is a... Basically, it's like a bunch of like odd people who are kind of... who forge a superhero team. But it is like... It's very whimsical and silly.
Mm-hmm.
But also like takes the right thing seriously in the book. So it is still a quite a solid story. It's being turned into a Netflix series, which is why so much of the Young Animal output was delayed. Gerard Way was spending his time working on that.
Cool.
And he also was writing a follow-up series to the original Umbrella Academy run, which sees Gabrielle Barr return.
I'm immediately like, well, now I don't like you, Gerard Way, because you should have been paying more attention to comic books.
Well, he was writing this comic book, I guess. But yeah, Gabrielle Barr returns as the artist. I think the original run had Fabio Moon on some issues as well, but I could be wrong.
I love Gabrielle Barr.
They're both so good. That's like, yeah. Him being involved as artist is reason enough for me to pick this up again.
Absolutely.
I don't remember the first series very well. I do have intentions of rereading it one day, but who can fit in and reread when we're reading 50 something comics a week for the podcast?
Gee whiz.
This is, you know, it's very, 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 you know, like it's very similar to a Grant Morrison book in that it throws several different scenarios at you that you're not sure what to make of. It's also very similar to Matt Fraction's Casanova run, which he does with Gabrielle Barr and Fabio Moon. We catch up with the superheroes from the Umbrella Academy. Some of them are out of shape. Some of them are out of the business. It's very reliant on you remembering the events of the first series because I was quite lost in this.
Wow.
So I might wait for this to be collected. I love the artwork. Gabrielle Barr is just such a joy to see, especially when colored by... who is it? Oh, God damn it.
Yeah, they did the really... at the time, I was like, oh, cool. So the credits are like presented as a menu.
Yeah.
And there's like actual... So you have to try and find the names amongst the menu items.
Yep, but colours by Nick Vallardi.
Well, he killed it. I enjoyed this more than I anticipated because I went in being like, Gerard Way, poor man's Grant Morrison. But it's so gorgeous and I had no idea what was going on, but I sort of went along with it anyway.
Yeah.
So I think I probably will go back and read Umbrella Academy at some point in my
life. I think you would like it.
Yeah, I think I probably would.
It's way better than his Doom Patrol.
Classic Siobhan is a great, I don't like that thing without reading it. And then 10 years later, be like, no, actually, that's really good. So I will read that at some point. And I'll probably do the same as you and wait until this is collected.
It's called The Umbrella Academy Hotel Oblivion.
It doesn't need our help to sell it.
What's
that? People are already picking this up. People already love this, you know?
That's good. Dark Horse also put out a new series called Death Orb this week.
Death Orb.
A new mini series, like kind of cyberpunk.
That's my stripper name. Death Orb.
Created by Alejandro Aragon and Ryan Ferrier, with script by Ryan, art by Alejandro, colors by Chris O'Halloran.
Beautiful.
That's how you pronounce his name. With a blueberry-flavored burp in the middle. Death Orb is like a hard sci-fi, cyberpunk kind of book-ish. This is the sci-fi book I was talking about that I
did
just,
not like as much.
I was just like, whatever.
Yeah.
Artwork's sick.
The artwork's great. What actually happened in it?
That's what I mean. It was one of I just kind of went along with the ride of this, you know, like character who's kind of given a mission. It's like kind of like Mad Maxian in a way. But anyway, the main character also dies at the end of this one too. And I was like, what's the point? Where in These Savage Shores, I was like, holy shit, what does this mean for the rest of the series? This happened in this one. I was like, well, what was the point of what I just read?
Yeah. Yeah, look, I'm probably not going to read issue two, if I'm honest. Oh, no! I can't believe I missed this.
The Lone Ranger.
Oh, I hate myself.
The Lone Ranger.
I'm not supposed to say that.
A property that I don't care that much about. Didn't see the movie, have never read anything.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Regarding the Lone Ranger, who I guess is like a cowboy.
Yeah, he's a cowboy. He's a gay cowboy.
He's explicitly a gay cowboy? Oh, sick.
I think so. Isn't it, guys, the Lone Ranger is gay, right? Isn't the Lone Ranger gay?
Everyone's like, what? I don't know if the Lone Ranger's gay.
We're looking it up. The Lone Ranger. Isn't the Lone Ranger gay? Wait, hang on. Who's gay?
Isn't there
a gay cowboy in comics?
This is the rest of the episode
now. Is this good?
Siobhan just yelling out to customers, is the Lone Ranger gay?
Two-Gun Kid, sorry. Rawhide Kid. That's who I'm thinking of. Sorry. Continue.
Okay, right. So unfortunately, Lone Ranger, not gay. But the Lone Ranger in a new series published by Dynamite, written by Mark Russell, who previously gave us The Flintstones and Snagglepuss. So very adept at working with properties that we didn't know we cared about until he works on them.
Yep.
With art and colors by Bob Q. And as this is published by Dynamite, even though it's a creator that I like, I'm always trepidatious before like going, oh, this is going to be good. This was awesome. But this was a Mark Russell.
I'm so annoyed with myself.
No jokes.
Yeah.
He didn't
what?
Do. Yeah, this is like a very, very like solid.
Serious cowboy book?
Serious, like late 1800s cowboy on the ranges book fighting.
Cool.
Weird racist guys who in the South.
That sounds amazing.
About borderlines. And like, you know, a lot of explanation of the borderlines and taking people's property with barbed wire and that kind of thing. And Lone Ranger has been out of touch with Tonto, the Native American character.
That's who this cowboy is.
As played by Johnny Depp in the movie.
My favorite actor.
Great idea, everybody. But at the end of the issue, yeah, he realizes he needs help. So he goes to enlist the help of Tonto.
Great.
Very slow to trust the Lone Ranger again. But Tonto is like quite threatening in this.
Cool.
We see him like up perched atop a tree pointing a gun at the Lone Ranger's head.
Cool.
It's really good, man. This is you should definitely read this once we finish recording.
Yeah,
it was
I'm
a killer number one, a really nice surprise. And
love Mark Russell.
Yeah, and if you can try and find the Mike Allred variant, which is
but also
really
the John
nice
Cassaday cover is gorgeous.
Yeah, definitely.
I love John Cassaday.
Oh, so you recognize his very good. Siobhan knows a thing or two about signatures.
Sure do.
Dynamite also put out a new series of Rainbow Bright this
you
week.
Told me specifically to read this and then I didn't.
Okay, so in theory this should be great.
Yeah,
because it is written by Jeremy Whitley, who we actually surprisingly liked on the
Unstoppable Wasp.
More importantly, the art is by Brittany Williams.
I love Brittany Williams.
Who was the artist on Goldie Vance.
Yep.
And several other things that we've enjoyed since we started the podcast. And the perfect choice for a kind of, you know, fun all ages book like this. Colors by Valentina Pinto. Rainbow Bright is like an 80s cartoon that never made any sense to me as a kid. And I never thought to, you know, explore in any way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really appeal to me at all. But instead, so we get like, this is a story in which two young LARPers
Oh, no. That's not a good way to start any story.
They're not so much LARPers as they are like just like two young friends that hang out with each other and just pretend to be in their own fantasy world and get annoyed when their parents interrupt them.
Okay.
One night, it's Willow and Wisp. One night, the blonde one gets like... comes face to face with some monsters and is visited by a Rainbow Bright, who is like this weird pixie thing, who then helps her transport to the world of Rainbow Bright, and leaving her friend who she LARPs with, curling out her name, and now it's up to, it's, the comic is going to be split half with like her friend in the real world trying to find out what happened to her friend, and then the other girl in the land of Rainbow Bright. I am interested in seeing like the real world friend trying to find her friend who's escaped this weird fantasy world, but the fantasy Rainbow Bright stuff does nothing for me. So I depending on how many comics come out the week that issue 2 comes out, I'll give this a choice. I'll give it a chance, but it looks great. Brittany Williams' art is awesome, and Jeremy Whitley did a pretty good job like telling a story that I did not care about at all, but with just enough good character work and dialogue for me to keep reading.
Okay,
potentially more issues in the future.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, it's not the creator's fault I wasn't super on board. It's the property's fault.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Over to Boom Studios now for another another book that I was really into. Sparrowhawk. Sparrowhawk is a book written by Delilah S. Dawson with illustrations by Matthias Basler.
Gorgeous.
I'm not familiar with either of those people. What happened in this one again? I read it so long ago.
So there is the illegitimate daughter of a... lady? Just a lord?
Totally.
Some kind of rich man.
Yeah.
And he's passed away, and so her stepmother, who dislikes her for, you know, fairly obvious reasons.
Also possibly racism, because she, probably her main racism. Character is black.
What then happens? So she... Oh, man. What happens in it?
There's a weird mirror, and a being comes out and like swaps trades places with her basically, and so she's stuck in fairy.
Yes, and so then we see the sort of fairy version of her creating mischief in her world, and her trying to get enough sort of magical power together to be able to get home.
And
her world is destroyed.
The way you get magical power is by killing magical things.
Yeah, and so she kills a magical being, and then she gets some pretty sweet wings.
Yeah. Which is really, really, cool. Yeah, really, really cool and different. Art reminded me a lot of Andrew, what's another guy who does Headlopper?
Andrew McLean.
Andrew McLean's art. Yeah, yeah.
Very like Euro.
Yes, definitely. And there's like some sadness in this book. Like she, in order to get the help from this one magical being in fairy, she has to. She's asked for her firstborn. He's like, well, I don't have any children. She's like, okay, all I ask is that you part with your favorite memory.
Yeah.
And her memory is of this like friend of hers from the real world. And it's like, it's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But done really, really well. Sparrowhawk. Really cool. Liked it. Good work, Boom Studios.
Absolutely. Loved it.
I thought I would give Star Wars Adventures Tales from Vader's Castle, a ghost story, a chance.
How'd it go?
Because IDW do pretty fun, like mostly all ages, like very cool, like they're just a bit more lighthearted Star Wars tales than what Marvel publish. Mm-hmm. And this is written by Kevan Scott with art by Derek Charm half of it, and then Chris Finoglio for the rest of it. I thought it was going to be like this fun story of like these guys like trying to get into Vader's castle. It'll be like a horror story trying about that. And it is, but then it jumps back in time and it's like all of the Star Wars Rebels characters encountering Darth Vader's castle for the first time.
Okay.
Or something. Or encountering the play. I don't know, whatever.
Whatever.
I don't have any connection to those characters, so it lost me pretty quickly. But the Derek Charm present day artwork was awesome.
Cool.
And that is my review.
Nice.
The Lollipop Kids. Did you read this?
Yeah.
Aftershock published this one by Adam Glass and Aiden Glass with Diego Yapur. I forget this one. What happened in this one too?
So a brother is trying to find his sister who's missing, who he used to be really close to, but then their mother died in a car accident. Is that correct?
Yep.
And so they started fighting.
No, she was shot.
Oh, she was shot. Right. That would be more traumatic.
She's a black character in a comic book, and that's how most of them meet their end.
Absolutely. White father, still alive, but a firefighter who works shifts, so isn't around that much. And so brother and sister have fallen apart, And so he's trying to find her, and then he comes across a werewolf, and then he's rescued by a group of kids. Is that supposed to be his sister who's leading them? Or is that just a girl?
I think it's a girl.
Anyway, and now he's going to become a lollipop kid, who are apparently a group of magical kids who protect the world from evil magic guys.
Yeah, I don't know why it's called the Lollipop Kids. I feel like I would care more about this if it was not called the Lollipop Kids.
Yeah, I know. I thought that like, I really enjoyed it. And then that final line was so goofy and...
You're a lollipop kid.
Yeah, I was like, what has this got to do with lollipops at any point?
This is pretty good, but it was nowhere near as good as that Burnouts book that came out through Image a couple of weeks ago.
True, this
is a similar thing, like these, you know, kids defending the world from aliens/evil.
With a similarly goofy title.
Yeah, so I think I'll stick with Burnouts and maybe not read any more of this one.
Okay.
Spook House
is a
weekly horror anthology that Albatross Comics, which is what's his name, Eric Powell, the Goon guy's imprint, mm-hmm. every October he does a weekly anthology in the lead up to Halloween of just fun short horror stories that are often quite funny. So Spook House 2 is the second incarnation of this book, features contributions from Steve Mannion, Jake Smith, Kyle Hotz, and my goodness, the opening one by Steve Mannion, written and drawn by him, is called Disgusting Monsters from the Planet Glorgoth, which is probably my favorite thing in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Just a really fun brief and like quick story about a zombie girl who isn't accepted by society, but until she destroys all these disgusting monsters from the planet Gorgoth.
Great.
Very fun.
That's awesome.
Then there's a story about a haunted go-kart with Larry Powell. And then another highlight is a story written by Eric Powell with art by Kyle Hotz, which is a tribute to Bernie Wrightson and Len Wein.
Oh, cool.
And so it is called The Crud Kid. And it's just like, it's like a fun kind of goofy take on Swamp Thing.
Great.
With excellent Bernie Wrightson-esque art.
I'm so excited for that Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein Alive collection that's coming out this week.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, looks good.
Okay, cool. Excellent. But yeah, pick it up, man. Everyone should read some spooky comics in October, and this is a good one.
Absolutely.
Nice and fun.
Good spooky comics time.
So guess what, everyone? Siobhan read a comic that I didn't.
I read it because I still love that Antonio Banderas Zorro movie. Rewatched it recently.
Puss in Boots, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, absolutely. I had such a crush on Zorro as a kid.
Angus revealed to me last week that in, like, I think Chile, the movie Puss in Boots is called Shrek's Cat.
Good. I love it. Anyway, so for some reason, I decided I would read Zorro Swords of Hell, Part 1 of 4, published by American Mythology Productions. Written by David Aloney, art by Roy Allen Martinez, colors by Emmanuel Ordez Torres, letters by Natalie Jane. And this is a fairly average Zorro story where he's like, I'm not Zorro anymore. I'm just going to dance and sword fight with my sexy wife and my dad.
So Zorro is like public domain now. Anyone can write and publish a Zorro story.
Let's do it.
Zorro, what happens here?
It's all nude. I don't know.
Except his dick is a sword.
His dick is a sword. Yes. Great. All right, I'm getting started on it. Anyway, that would be way better than this, which is Zorro versus Zombies, which I don't think is the thing that anyone needs to see. The end.
Great. That's another great edition of First Things First. Extremely long one.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you read any of the number ones that we liked and would like to discuss them, the best place to do that is to head to the Facebook page, our group, that is.
Yes.
The Serious Issues Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast, where thousands of listeners and comic book fans talk about comics all damn day. There have been a lot of great posts recently about the new announcements of New York Comic Con,
mm-hmm.
including some of the members who were at New York Comic Con that got amazing solicitation. No, what's it called when you get when
commissions?
Commissions, that's the word. Thank you so much. Solicitation of Gordon. No. Sorry, everybody. Hey, let's talk about some books that weren't number ones, and we're going to start with DC just because I said DC first.
Great.
So we'll do DC. Batman, issue number 56.
I've stopped reading Batman.
Right.
I put my foot down this week.
I think you would have actually liked this issue.
Probably.
Last issue we saw...
Dick Grayson get shot in the back of the head.
You have to read it because then we're going to do put all 100 reviews of Tom King's Batman Run together.
Well, I didn't read this one anyway. Tell me about it.
So Yeah, we saw KG Beast. It's revealed it was KG Beast that shot Dick Grayson in the head at the end of issue 55.
Okay.
And most of this issue is KG Beast tracking down his father, and his father shows disapproval of him for not being able to kill the Batman. Why did he kill...
Okay.
Why did he kill the boy when he could have killed the Bat?
So he didn't even kill the boy, right?
Yeah. Well, as we'll learn in Nightwing 50, which
I'm
we'll talk about
next.
I'm
glad you read that, because I didn't.
I think you would also would have liked that too.
Really? Everyone told me I would have hated it at Queens.
Basically Batman is trying to track down KG Beast as KG Beast has a discussion with his father, and then kills his father at the end of this issue. But
he kills his father at the end of this issue.
Yeah, because...
That's quite mean.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think this is like a Tom King being dark issue that works.
Okay.
As opposed to most of this run.
Yeah.
I think this is like, even though I didn't like the first issue of this arc, I thought this is a pretty solid issue. I'm actually, yeah, quite enjoying Tony S. Daniels' art as well.
Yeah, I feel like Tony Daniels come some way.
Great inks by Danny Mickey and Timon Morey on colors too. Pretty good issue, 56.
Okay.
Looking forward to the rest of this 100 issue run. And the emotions that we're going to face on the way.
That's so many more issues.
hey, speaking of 50-something, what about issue 50 of Nightwing?
Great.
Which has the title, Once He Was Nightwing. And he has a Nightwing logo scar on his head where the bullet has exited his head.
Shaved his head.
So he did not die after the bullet went through his head.
So has Scott Lobdell already... Is this Scott Lobdell?
No, it's Benjamin Percy who is responsible for Green Arrow. It's got nothing. So wait, is Lobdell taking over? Well, this was not Lobdell.
Okay.
I'll tell you who it was because somewhere the details are written down. I'm sure maybe at the end. So this is written by Benjamin Percy with art by Travis Moore, Chris Mooneyham, and Klaus Janson on art with colors by Tamara Bonvillain, Nick Filardi, and John Calise. Really, really great art team. This book looked great. It's a bumper size issue, double size, in which Dick Grayson has lost a lot of his memories after a bullet went through his head. Mm-hmm. And instead of reconnecting with the Bat family, he's decided to forget them all, forget Nightwing. He burns down Nightwing. And this is essentially like the fresh start kind of issue.
Okay.
But I actually kind of enjoyed it. I get if you have obviously an attachment to the character, which I've lost because I haven't really enjoyed any Nightwing books in a long time.
Yeah.
I think maybe a fresh start is what this character needs. And it doesn't happen in as grim a way as you would expect. I think he is trying to put a positive spin on getting a new life. But then Bloodhaven's like, man, I sure wish Nightwing was still around. My job was way easier when he was around.
Right.
So there's nice little moments like that. And then you have the Bat family being like, we've lost our Dick. But yeah, that was interesting. Now knowing that Scott Lobdell is about to take over, I'm a lot less interested in what his new life is going to be like. But I enjoyed Benjamin Percy's kind of retelling of we get an older story featuring the Scarecrow in which... Robin ends up scaring Scarecrow and the Scarecrow is totally terrified of Robin.
Great.
Wow,
that's a shockingly sexy Nightwing.
And Nightwing is shockingly sexy as drawn by one of those three artists.
Whoever.
Yeah.
Whoever that was. Well coloured as well.
Yeah, that's definitely Tamara Bonvillain characters because he has a nice pinkness to his skin.
Absolutely. He looks so healthy.
Yeah. But I enjoyed this. I totally understand why others would not, but I think you maybe would have enjoyed this issue.
All right.
But who knows?
Everyone at Queens of Kings turned me against it. They were like, he's too grim. He's this am I Grayson? Am I Dick? No, I'm just a man. I drive a taxi now. Why does he drive a taxi now?
Because he just wanted some job. He needs money.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm,
mm. Yeah, I don't know. Look, maybe this will be reviewed as a horrible era of Nightwing.
Maybe.
But I thought this was
not
actually,
by you.
This is a pretty fun, not fun, but it was a solid issue.
All right.
Deathstroke. Issue number 36 sees Deathstroke, now a prisoner at Arkham Asylum, where he...
Bobby Christopher Priest.
Yeah, this is written by Christopher Priest with two artists, one of them much better than one of the others.
Ed Benny's?
Ed Benny's art is my favourite. He does an amazing job of this great fight between Deathstroke and a bunch of Arkham inmates, including a brilliant panel where Zaz stabs...
Deathstroke in his good eye.
I don't know if that's a flash forward to the future or something in their heads. Fernando Pazarin.
Christopher Priest doesn't like to I really need to read this from the start at some point because it's so like referential and so jumps all over the place. It's not very linear.
Yeah, it's like
so clever.
They'll every like you know every now and then you'll get like a word balloon that will have three asterisks in it.
Yeah,
and each of those will link to like three different issues. It'll be like, I see it in Death Street number 9 and Death Street number 21 and the annual number 2. It's like, oh, okay, you really need to read everything and remember every moment to fully
appreciate
it. But it's great.
I still enjoy it. Still enjoy every issue. Just couldn't tell you what's going on.
Yeah, there are moments that I'm completely lost in, but the heart of each issue has the story is enough to push you forward and be
absolutely.
Like, yeah, and there's so many great moments in it.
And I like this ongoing story of, is Deathstroke crazy and hallucinating a sort of computer version of Wintergreen, or is it genuinely a computer program in his brain?
Yeah, it's fun.
Good and fun. I like it.
He gets abducted by aliens at the end of this issue.
Yes, he does.
Which is great. Sure.
Great.
With this new character with Spaceman.
Yep.
Who I've never heard of before, but he's funny.
But who is like a bit fourth wall breaky and funny.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Really liked it a lot.
Injustice 2, I liked even more. Tom Taylor wrote this one.
Is this the final issue?
No, not quite. Still not yet. Daniel Samper and Bruno Redondo on art with inks by Juan Albaran and colors by Rex Locus. And this was basically...
The wedding issue.
Yeah, exactly. The wedding issue between Orca and Killer Croc, including a brilliant scene in which the still living members of Suicide Squad track down Killer Croc to say that, like, hey, like, we spoke to Ra's al Ghul and like you guys can totally get married now. How cool is that? Like, and there's just like this really sweet moment between these like dumb characters.
Yeah, 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 totally.
Including like a great like Ra's al Ghul's wedding gift to the two of them is like meant to be seen as like a brilliant kind of, you know, thing for them to appreciate, and they don't at all.
Yep.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Really, really good issue.
Good Grodd moments.
Yeah.
I always wish Captain Boomerang could be written by an Australian.
Yes.
It's always way funnier.
Way funnier.
Or way more accurate. Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot.
Great issue.
Still good.
I think, yeah, I know it's coming to an end very soon. It already has digitally, but we've got a few more issues of in print. That's why you should always read things in print.
Absolutely.
Because you get to pad it out as long as possible. Sandman Universe, The Dreaming, written by Simon Spurrier, Bilquis Everly, and Matt Lopez on art and colors, respectively. I need to stop reading this, I think.
Yeah, I didn't get to it because I knew it was going to take me ages.
It looks so good. Bilquis Everly's art is so incredible.
It's so perfect for this project.
I'm not getting attached to the story, and I don't really like how he writes any of the characters.
Oh, that's a shame.
Which is a shame because like I've previously said that like I love it when Simon Spurrier is given someone else's toys to play with as opposed to creating his own from scratch.
I like it when he's given a big shark to play with.
Sure. That was a brilliant story. Hookjaw.
No.
It's not called Shark Knife. why the fuck
Shark Knife is a different comic, though.
Is it actually a comic called Shark Knife? Right.
Yeah, Shark Knife by Corey Lewis, right?
Yeah. Hey, Scott, is Shark Knife gay?
What's that?
No, nothing.
Shark Knife is a real comic, though, right? You know Shark Knife. Am I making this
you
up?
Are so,
am I going crazy?
You're on one today.
Isn't Shark Knife a real comic? Oh, man, I'm so tired.
Maybe this
anyway.
Will read.
Hook Knife. Hook Shark.
It's Hookjaw. Anyway, I think this will read a lot better in trade when it eventually comes out, but I can't do it issue to issue. There's too much to remember and not enough for me to attach to.
Fair enough. What's great, though?
Yeah, another Vertigo book coming out is Border Town, written by Eric M. Esquivel. With Ramon Villalobos on art, with Tamara Bonvillain on colors. And man, this is such a good book. Basically, it's about a boy going to a new school, but also at this new school where he faces racial intolerance, he also faces monsters from the underworld.
But from like the Aztec underworld.
Yep. Man, it's so weird and cool and great. And like... As they fight these monsters, they're also concerned of, like, you know, being targeted by police and not being believed by police.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much going on. It's also really funny.
It's really funny, and the art's so gorgeous. And this, like, gang of sort of misfits are so, like, I'm already very emotionally attached to all of these characters. And if anything happens to Kinte, I will...
Yep, he is a good one.
I will be so unhappy.
But, yeah, they're basically a nice monster has escaped the underworld and all of these other monsters are chasing after it. So it has like a bit of like an Attack the Block kind of vibe as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I need to rewatch that movie. I love that movie.
I love Attack the Block.
I love
this comic book. I think it's so brilliant and perfect and a great, like, if you just want like a new fun monster teen action series, Yeah, when would you not want that in your life?
It's so good to see Villalobos just let loose on these crazy monsters as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like that double page spread where you get all of the sort of underworld villains.
Yeah, so
man.
Cool.
Man.
Good shit.
And good and scary and
not,
awesome.
And not afraid to get gory too, which is
absolutely
great.
Absolutely. Yeah. And like that weird potato head dude. Yes, please.
Let's talk about Image Comics now. Okay. With the return of Redlands by Jordi Belair and Vanessa Del Rey with Clayton Cowles. Issue 7 came out this week after a pretty long hiatus issue 6 came out. And this is, of course, about their witches by night, but police women by day.
Yes, please.
This deals with some pretty heavy themes throughout can be quite action-packed and grisly, but this issue was quite a quiet issue that deals mostly with the return of the witch's father figure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So not the biological father, but I guess maybe the one who endowed them with their powers or something like that.
Yes, because I don't think they have the same biological father.
Yeah. A lot of setting the stage for, I guess, the next arc of this book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We
still have one of the characters who's someone else trapped in the body layer. There's two people trapped in one body.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of vibe.
Then we also kind of have some flashes back to ancient Egypt, which I guess is like kind of like almost like, you know, history repeating itself or something like that for our future characters.
It's such a good book.
Really,
and Jordi
Belair
is like a really great writer, and I love her... I love the way that she approaches all of these really dark, heavy themes and using the sort of like ancient Egyptian art style as a kind of... Well, what did you just do to me? Did you just put something on my head?
No. Go away, Wayne.
God. God! It's like working with like all of your annoying brothers. You know what I mean? God.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought that was clever and cool. And I like it.
Yeah, Redlands.
It's so spooky.
Really good stuff.
So good.
Go get that first trade and then pick up this issue too, because it's good stuff.
Love it.
Paper Girls, I think, put out the strongest issue that they've done in quite a while this week.
Fucking what a good issue.
Issue number 25, written by Brian K. Vaughan with Cliff Chang on art and Matt Wilson on colors, where they're just going for broke with incredible sci-fi time travel nonsense.
Yep.
They're splitting the girls up. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, bringing them together and then splitting them up. Man, some really gorgeous character moments in this issue. It was a bit of a quieter issue than with a big bang ending.
He can't not do an insane cliffhanger ending, but this is maybe one of the most insane ones yet.
But I love it. I love this world that he's created, and I love that Paper Girls always...
this is not a quieter issue. Something extremely explosive happens in the middle of it.
you're very right. But I love that Paper Girls always feels like it's going to be a much quieter book, or like it feels like it's going to be shorter, and then something will happen and you're like, oh yeah, there's at least two more arcs to go. Yeah, you're the best, BKB. I love it.
So good. It's so different to Saga as well.
So different to Saga.
The characters and themes are so different. The story that it's telling is so different. It is a saga in itself, but it's very different. It's great. Great book.
And the art and the colors
and the cover
always
and everything
so
is
beautiful.
Beautiful package. It's just, like comics, single issue comics don't get better than this.
They really don't.
Yep, it's got everything going for it. Die 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 continued this week with issue number 3, written by Robert Kirkman, with art by Chris Burnham. Sorry, also written with Scott M. Gimple and colors by Nathan Fairbairn. Great team.
Yes.
And this is a book that I'm actually liking more and more with this issue.
This is the first Robert Kirkman book that I've really been like, I enjoy this a lot.
Yeah.
And that's because of Chris Burnham.
But he also, like, Kirkman's, like, writing filthy.
Yeah.
And it's really entertaining.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure about these the first two issues, but I really like it. You know, we have, like, these...
He's disgusting.
Presidential kind of...
sex clubs.
Yeah.
Freaky sex clubs.
So it's like half of this issue is an orgy, and the other half is, a heist gone wrong.
Well, we see the character who... so there's three assassin brothers, and one of them, the evil one, has cut off his nose to pretend to be his good brother, and we see his girlfriend slowly figuring out that it's not him,
and
then
course,
she also has cool ninja powers.
Yeah, she's also badass. So, man, so much fun. That was a brilliant final page.
And the political stuff, it's like, it's silly and it's goofy and it's just cynical enough and it's just topical enough.
And also kind of dumb as well, which is what's
also
so fun
dumb.
About it. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, it's not taking itself too seriously. Mm-hmm. It's not like an Alice Cott book.
Yep.
This is extremely enjoyable.
Yep, definitely. And it's not as gross as like a Garth Ennis book when he's done similar things.
Exactly. And the ultra violence is it's just enough
for
me.
Definitely.
There's no one cuts off their nose in a horrific way in this issue, but there's still plenty of good violence.
Yeah, like the most gory panel is a picture of a steak.
Yeah. I feel like Chris Burnham is having a lot of fun with this book.
Definitely. And Kirkman too.
Yeah, absolutely. Good fun.
The Walking Dead this week, also written by Robert Kirkman.
Keeps on walking.
Issue number 184. Keeps on walking while still being dead. What's the deal?
That's
Charlie Adlard on art duties with Stefano Guardino and Cliff Rathburn on Grey Tones. And this is about like our heroes in a new civilized society, but they're learning with each issue that it's not as civilized as you'd think.
Mm.
This is a much slower arc than what we've had in the past, and I don't know how I'd feel about it if I was still buying this issue month to month, but reading it is almost like when you get, you know, like if you bought like the daily newspaper, you would get like four panels of a Dick Tracy story.
Yes.
Each day. It feels like that.
And the first two panels are like recap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you're really just getting one panel every day. That's what this feels like. But it's still pretty good. Final Image book is The Last Siege, written by Landry Q. Walker with Justin Greenwood, Brad Simpson, and Patrick Brousseau. This is the kind of like book in which it's like a vengeance book. It's pretty good, big revenge story. And in this, we learn the kind of backstory of our hero who is kind of taken the place as the leader of this doomed castle, and we set the stage for a big fight between him and this longtime nemesis for not just him but also people that this awful guy has fucked up and killed in the past. Good
Hectic.
Shit, really good shit, brilliant art by Justin Greenwood.
Yeah, cool.
It's a good book. It's unlike anything else I'm reading at the moment. It's really fun. Marvel gave us Death of Inhumans this week, and that means that's a good comic.
Sure is. Man, what a good issue. I only just read this morning, so I'll actually have interesting things to say about it.
Yeah, so they pulled
it. Can't guarantee it's going to be interesting. Sorry.
Donny Cates wrote this one with art by Ariel Olivetti, colors by Jordi Belair. In the first few issues of Death of Inhumans, we saw the Inhumans die we see them disintegrated into nothing.
Mm-hmm,
And
by this bad guy called Vox.
And basically they've been trying to work out what Vox is doing, like who's they know that he has access to a lot of Inhumans' powers, and they assumed it was Black Bolt's power that he was using to kill the characters. Without spoiling, it's not that. And they pull the rug out from us, and you know, as we kind of, you know, assumed they would, but it's done in a way that I never would have expected, and the kind of moment,
yes,
I'm so glad comes in this issue and not the final issue next month, because it just means that issue is going to be even more fun.
Donny Cates is so good. I really hope that Marvel don't just like work him until he has nothing left, but like he has got some of the most fun, creative, weird stories and like interesting ways of looking at things and new things that I haven't seen done in superhero comics.
I might be
before.
Wrong, but it seems like everything he's done so far has been something he's pitched.
I would assume
which could be a big difference as to, you know, I feel like Rosenberg just gets thrown on anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
this is so fun. We've got Beta Ray Bill. We've got all of the Inhumans working
some
together.
Great Karnak moments.
Yeah.
I
love this version of Black Bolt. I love his Black Bolt.
But the big twist is just, it's brilliant. It's a masterstroke. It's something that you rarely get in a superhero comic where you, like, I couldn't predict.
Genuinely
that.
Surprised.
I was like, what the fuck? Great.
Yeah.
Great
a moment of genuine surprise is such a rare thing when you read all of the superhero comics, and they tend to work with similar themes and similar things seem to happen all the time to keep the status quo. But so this is, it's a real treat.
Yeah, definitely. So normally I would like just spoil what happened in a superhero comic flippantly, but I feel like everyone should read this, and I'm not sure if everyone is. So
absolutely.
Pick up Death of the Inhumans when you can, because it's real good stuff.
Yep.
Donny Cates also wrote Cosmic Ghost Rider this week, which is also fantastic, with brilliant art by Dylan Burnett.
So fun.
One of my favorite Cates collaborators at this point. Just such good art. Antonio Fabella on colors. Cosmic Ghost Rider is, of course, the mad and powerful Frank Castle many, many years into the future, endowed with cosmic powers.
Yep. He's a Ghost Rider and a Herald of Galactus.
Yes. Also kind of a Deadpool in a way.
Also kind of a Deadpool.
But he basically kidnapped Thanos and tried to raise him himself. And so now we have this weird future version in which Thanos becomes the Punisher.
It's good fun, guys.
And it's now Frank Castle with two Thanoses.
Yep. Baby Thanos. an adult Punisher Thanos.
It's so silly, but it's so compelling and good, yeah. And a really interesting study of the Punisher, more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, what makes the Punisher tick?
Yeah, it's so great.
Why does he have this sort of, no, this is a point that I will not cross. Where is that point for him? Also, we get to see, I was trying to sell this book to the girls at Queens on Sunday, and I was like, yeah, it's like a baby Thanos, and the Punisher is carrying around baby Thanos. And one of the girls was like, does he carry him in a baby carrier? I was like, yes, and the baby carrier is made of chains. What more do you want, guys?
It's so good. Although, there are many times in this where I forget that it's chains, and it looks like he's wrapped in intestines.
also good. Also a good option.
But yeah, great series. Really yeah. fun, really silly and funny, but also just like a solid.
It's absolutely.
Great. Yeah. I read Tony Stark Iron Man this week, and this book is reaching the potential that I was hoping it would.
Oh, yeah?
Written by Dan Slott with Valerio Schiti and Edgar Delgado on art duties.
It's got a smooch on the cover.
Yeah. Look, a lot of it is exploring the kind of, relationships that these characters have with AI and whether or not these AI should... Basically, it's about AI rights.
Okay, yeah.
But it's done in a kind of fun... Not quite hokey, but it is... It's approached with a really fun mentality.
Sorry, I just saw that. I hadn't seen an ad for that before. Cool. Donny Cates, Trouble Foreman, Marvel Knights. Great.
Real great. In this, it's clever. Like, basically, this kind of introduces like a Stark developed version of Tinder, which gets taken over by a rogue AI.
And, hilarious.
And basically, like, finds everyone their perfect match and then sends an evil robot to them, which is just... And it's a lot of fun. Like, every issue has been a kind of one and done with threads continuing to each issue. And I am looking forward to when it is becoming, like, a more, like, you know, a bigger story. Mm-hmm. But these have been fun issues, and this is probably the funnest issue so far.
Yeah, cool.
And I like his take on Tony. It's just like a fun, sexy Tony.
That's what you want, I suppose.
I also caught up on Mark Waid's Doctor Strange run, which yes. I dropped off on after the first issue. And then everyone in our Facebook group in the last week have been talking about how good it got.
Yeah.
So I caught up and I read, in this already busy week, I managed to read an extra 6 issues of Doctor Strange.
Oh, my God.
So Doctor Strange issue 6 sees Doctor Strange return to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's been in space these last 5 issues, and it's been narrated by someone... which in issue 5 is revealed to be Doctor Strange narrating his own story from space, which was a fun little reveal. And he's narrating it to Bats, the ghost dog, who I was worried would never show up again.
Yes, I'm glad Bats is back.
And so now he returns to Earth, and there's like a fun twist, and then basically it's Doctor Strange versus Doctor Strange.
What?
It's great. It's
space fun. Doctor Strange versus regular Doctor Strange?
There's a twist. Okay. It's not actually, it's not what it may seem.
Okay.
It's really, really cool and fun, and I'm definitely going to be continuing this series now.
Okay.
It's good to read a good Mark Waid book.
All right.
And it justified the thing I didn't like about that first issue, which was the narration, which I saw as unnecessary and overwinded, but now that I knew it was Strange doing it, it's like, oh, that makes total sense. He is unnecessary and overwinded.
Very true.
Yeah. Good stuff. Did you read Asgardians of the Galaxy?
Nah.
Issue 2 came out this week, written by Cullen Bunn, with art by Matteo Lolli and Federico Blee. This is another big step up from the first issue, in which a bunch of Asgardians... people from Asgard become the Guardians of the Galaxy to investigate some cosmic nonsense. It had a moment in which they trigger us into thinking that Throg has been eaten and killed.
Oh, no.
I'm here to tell you, there's no way they would let the best character get eaten and killed.
Yeah, let's hope so.
I think Cullen Bunn writes a pretty good kid Loki. But this is a much better than the first issue, which I know you didn't like either. But
yeah.
I thought I'd give it another shot, and this is pretty solid. That is it for Marvel, Image, and DC. I've got 2 books from Black Crown to talk about in the other publishers section. Do you have any more than that?
No, I think that's it.
House
I read
Amok.
Both of those.
House Amok came out, issue number 2 came out, written by Christopher Sabella with, God damn it, where do you put your credit information? You tell me about the book while I find the credits.
So this is the book where a family is on the road committing horrific crimes,
and that family
of a conspiracy theory
is drawn by Sean McManus.
There you go. Rove's brother. That doesn't make any sense to anyone outside of Australia.
Also not true. Yeah, basically it's like a family dealing with, like, you know, basically like this shows the point at which the family was driven to start studying the occult and doing human sacrifices and stuff like that.
Yes, and the moment where everything went from being a fun game to being a horrifying, horrifying murder crimes
for one person in the family.
Yes.
And so she is a twin. He or she is a twin. So she's kind of going along with this awful, awful killing spree that her family are embarking upon whilst trying to somehow escape.
Yes.
It's a cool series.
It's a really, like, interesting concept.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun. I like it. Like, in a sort of horrifying way. And it's not necessarily the most, like, I don't love the art.
Mm.
It doesn't, but the story is pretty compelling.
Yeah, totally. We're going to see what this girl is, going to have to do, in order to kind of, like,
convince, take down the family that she still loves.
And also, while still, like, going along with what they are asking her to do.
Yeah.
To not blow a cover.
It's good fun.
Really interesting. Also coming out through Blackout this week was Euthanauts issue number 3, written by Teenie Howard, with Nick Robles on art and colors by Eva De La Cruz.
It's so beautiful.
It's a great book, this one. It's really good. And the art is phenomenal on this book too. A woman has been, a younger woman has been connected to an older scientist lady who has died, but their souls are entwined.
Yes.
They're
going to uncover the secrets of the afterlife together.
But she's also been left with, like, the lab belonging to this scientist and all of her possessions, but also has to collaborate with all these people from this woman's life, including, like, her partner's estranged son or something weird like that, who has a very different idea of science to everyone else in the book.
Yeah.
It's fun. There's some great, great scenes of the main character partying and getting fucked up and getting fucked as well.
Nice.
Accepting responsibility, but also trying to, like, numb her mind to the insane stuff that she's now a part of. I think it's good. It balances a lot of stuff.
Absolutely. Good characters, interesting plot, fun. It feels like a 90s Vertigo book, but written by a woman. It's crazy.
Yeah. The art is excellent stuff too. Teenie Howard's great.
Howard is really great. And she's so young. She's writing, like, the hell out of a load of comic books, and she is a young woman, and she is killing it.
She's going to be doing one of the Marvel Knights books as well.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
Great. Good call, Marvel.
One of the most exciting things, though, in the back matter of the Black Crown book. Of course, Black Crown is the imprint published by IDW, but it's run by Shelley Bond, who was one of the best editors over at Vertigo in the Vertigo's heyday.
Mm-hmm.
She mentions in the back matter that her favorite comic of all time, whenever she's asked to name it, is Stray Bullets, which listeners of the podcast will know is
only
one of
losers listen to.
One of
I
my
mean, Breed. Oh, man.
You're an idiot.
I'm an idiot.
But one of my favorite comics of all time, and an absolute, like, you know, I just lose my mind every time I ever get a new issue. That is finishing its current run very, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, the its creators, David and his wife Maria Latham, are starting a new series called Lodger, which is going to be published by Shelley Bond and Black Crown. And it looks and sounds like it's going to be real great.
Looks awesome. Looks really good. Black Crown are really, really doing great things, I think.
Yep.
Punk's Not Dead is out in trade this week, and I recommend people pick it up.
Definitely. It's good shit, but fucking hell. New David Latham book. Very excited.
I'm excited to be able to start something from the beginning by him.
You should just go back and read Cerebral. It's like I can lend you the enormous omnibus if you want.
All right.
You'd love it.
I know, I would.
So that is it for the episode. Another great one. Sorry we were a bit late this week, but unfortunately some of us have to play weird food events all over the country.
It's like your niche, though.
Yeah,
who else are they going to get to DJ a food event?
Yeah. What other DJ also writes food reviews?
Exactly.
That's the only way you can get booked for a food event.
Absolutely.
No other DJs know what food is.
They don't eat. Only consume beats.
It would be really, really cool if you spent a moment considering supporting the show. And if you spend a moment and realize, I will, you should head to patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. Give us a couple of dollars and you'll get access to a bunch of bonus material that we've recorded in the past. Plus the warm knowledge that you're supporting two people who spend a lot of their week reading comics so they can talk about it for your enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
When things get a little less hectic, we'll be recording some bonus material for you to listen to over the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of trades to talk about. I'm sure Siobhan must be reading up to 20 trades since we recorded a bonus episode. So
I have a bunch.
looking forward to doing that. Again, that's patreon.com/serioususerspodcast, and we thank everyone who is a supporter so far. Again, join us in Facebook, facebook.com/group/serioususerspodcast to discuss the episode. And until then, we will see you next week. Enjoy your new week of comic book reading, which starts now.
Nice.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.